Thanks for the conference for inviting me here to speak. This field is a little bit out of my field. I don't work much with entanglement. It's sort of been my hobby over the past year or so. I've mainly worked on topological insulators. So this work sort of combines these two themes. And I'm going to show you some pretty pictures today and leave my usual field theory stuff out of this talk. So the work I'm going to talk about today was done in collaboration with Andre Brnovic at Princeton and Emil Prodan at Sheba University. So for the outline of my talk, first I'm going to give you a brief introduction to topological insulators. Chinka sort of actually motivated part of my talks that helped me out a little bit. And then I'm going to only focus on the 2+1 dimensional cases, which Chinka also mentioned. Basically, the sort of Hall-Lee model of the quantum Hall effect and the Kane-Lee model of the quantum spin Hall effect. And I'm going to discuss the sort of single particle and mini particle entanglement spectra of these systems and show you some nice pictures. And at the end, I'm going to talk about topological insulators with disorder and tell you what the entanglement spectrum in disordered systems can tell you about topological insulators and hopefully about other many-body cases. So let me begin by sort of explaining a little bit further what a topological insulator is. So most of you are sort of split probably between condensed matter and quantum information, so let me just give you the basic sort of ideas. A topological insulator is a system where the bulk of the system is completely gapped. That means it's inert. So if you have a system with no boundaries, you attach wires to it, it doesn't conduct. But if you do have boundaries, there are actually gapless fermionic modes on the boundary which are protected in some sense. So, for example, quantum Hall has chiral edge states, and quantum spin Hall has Dirac. And if you write down topological superconductors, they can have Majorana or Cairo-Majorana states. And these fermionic modes are holographic. And so what that means is that if you try to write down, for example, a chiral fermion in an intrinsic dimension of, say, 1+1 dimensions, you can't do it in the lattice model. You always get the fermion doubling. And so the way to get a chiral fermion by itself in 1+1D is to actually have it arise as the boundary of a 2+1 dimensional system. So topological insulators are exactly systems which are gapped in the bulk but give you these sort of holographic liquids on the outside. And so the bulk of these states, so why are they topological? The bulk of the state is characterized as some non-zero topological invariant. So this topological invariant distinguishes different phases of matter because you can't continuously change a topological invariant, so it must change at a jump or a phase transition. And what we've been realized in the past couple of years is that some of these topological insulators may require auxiliary symmetries. So the quantum Hall effect does not require any symmetry. You break time reversal, you break translation symmetry, rotation symmetry, whatever you want. The quantum Hall effect is completely stable and can exist, whereas these new phases of matter, the new topological insulators, require things like time reversal symmetry or particle hole symmetry, things like this. There's a whole host of interesting materials, interesting examples of these states. So quantum Hall effects, quantum spin Hall, and the topological superconductors as well. And these are sort of states that people have studied in, say, the past 15 years very carefully, but they've sort of been unified into one sort of collection in the past few years. So this is the periodic table of topological insulators. So this was developed by the work of several groups, and it was sort of unified into one nice set of two tables by Kataev last year. So what you have is sort of an 8x8 periodic table for topological insulators here and sort of an extra two groups over there. So what this picture, what this diagram tells you is this is sort of the relevant space-time dimension. And these are the different symmetry classes of generic Hamiltonians. Okay, so each one of these letters is sort of a different symmetry class. So for example, the letter A here is for the unitary class of Hamiltonians. And you see that in 0+1 dimensions, you can have an integer value topological invariant. 2+1D, you can have an integer and so on. The class A2 here is the time reversal invariant case for fermions. So it's a symplectic class. And A1 is, for example, the orthogonal class, and you have these sort of Bogoliubov-Dejean classes, which are these orange ones here. So the two states I'm going to focus on here are this blue class here, which is the quantum Hall effect, specified by an integer topological invariant, and the Z2 class here, which is a case where you have to have an insulator with time-reversal invariance. This is the quantum spin Hall case. So the nice thing about this picture actually is actually is periodic. So actually, if you extend this to any number of dimensions you want, this sort of pattern repeats. And if you go from this side to that side, actually the symmetries begin repeating. So it's actually an 8x8 fully periodic table. I'm going to discuss two different states. This state, I have to assume time reversal symmetry.
But for this table, we all have.
No. But the point is that each one of these things means I assume some symmetry.
Okay. Oh, I
see. And the A class is unitary, so it means that I don't have to assume any symmetry of each one. So, for example, this guy means I assume a time reversal symmetry where T² equals minus 1. A1 means I assume a time reversal symmetry where T² equals plus 1. D means I assume a system with a particle hole symmetry where C² equals plus 1, this type of thing. So this periodic table requires, some of these classes require strict symmetries to be imposed for these states to be stable. Okay, so we actually have two nice physical examples of the two cases I'm going to talk about. So first of all, we have examples of quantum Hall. So this is an example of some kind of gallium arsenide chip. And if you apply a huge magnetic field to it, you will generate some plot like this, which shows the Hall plateaus. And 2 years ago, these mercury telluride, cadmium telluride samples were discovered. And there's some typical sort of experimental data you could get from these systems. So there actually are relative nature. The only caveat is that the quantum Hall effect I'm going to talk about is actually not the one you get by applying a huge magnetic field. It's the one you get by having some intrinsic magnetization in the system. And so that one actually has not been realized in nature yet, but there's some nice proposals to see those in two-dimensional semiconductors. So for quantum Hall, the bulk is gapped. It's an insulator. And the bulk is described by some integer topological invariant. There's chiral edge states on the edge. So you have edge states which run around in certain with certain chirality on the boundary. And this is in the unitary symmetry class and requires no special symmetries to be stable. So you don't have to impose anything. You can break time reversal, like I said earlier. Quantum spin Hall, in contrast, the bulk is gapped, but it's described by a Z2 invariant, which means it's an odd or even thing instead of an integer class. And instead of getting just a single chiral state on the boundary, you get a pair, which is a chiral and an anti-chiral one. And since you have fermions going both directions on the boundary, you would normally think you could backscatter and open up some gap. But if you require time reversal symmetry, you show that that's not allowed. And this is in the symplectic class, which requires time reversal symmetry. So a simple example of this, if you sort of look at the long wavelength expansion of the Halding model that Chinka wrote down in the last talk, you see it turns out to be sort of a massive 2 plus 1 dimensional Dirac equation. So the minimal model for all of these topological insulators in the continuum is simply a massive Dirac equation. It's very simple. And the only key point is that there's two different phases for the continuum model, one with a mass is less than 0, one with a mass is greater than 0. And typically, one of those phases is a topological insulator and one is a trivial insulator. So quantum Hall, you have some two-dimensional sheet, and on the boundary, there's some edge state running around it. Quantum spin Hall, all you do is you take two copies of quantum Hall, like Chinka mentioned, one for spin up this block, one for spin down, and you can initially write these guys as decoupled. And you can see that this Dirac Hamiltonian here has a different chirality than that one because the sign of px is switched in the lower block. And so this basically means that you can get, in one block, you get a quantum Hall effect with one chirality, in the other block, you get the quantum Hall with the other chirality. So this is sort of the picture. These guys are really in the same layer. It's not like you have a bilayer, but this is sort of a heuristic picture of what's going on here. So the simplest picture of quantum spin Hall, just two copies of quantum Hall, and the total thing preserves time reversal symmetry. Okay. So I've motivated a little bit sort of the introduction to topological insulators. Now we want to see what, is there any interesting entanglement properties of topological insulators? Okay, so first, does this work topological? And it's sort of many of you are involved with things like the toric code and the Kataev models. So this makes you think, okay, does this mean there's topological order of the system? And the answer is no. So topological insulators are actually not topologically ordered. They have a unique ground state. If you put them on a torus, some higher genus Riemann surface, the ground state's still unique. Okay, so that part of the topological insulator does not fit under the typical definition of topological order, whose ground state degeneracy depends on the manifold you're on. Okay? So this means that there's no topological entanglement entropy in topological orders. If you calculate this quantity, you always get zero. All right? So then we can ask, do these guys have any interesting entanglement properties? And it turns out they do. And so they actually have interesting fermionic character to their entanglement spectrum. So whereas they don't have any topological entanglement entropy, there's no constant piece added onto the entanglement entropy, they do have some kind of fermionic, I would say, contributions to the entanglement spectra. And not only that, but their entanglement entropy cannot ever be deformed to be exactly zero. Whereas in a trivial insulator, it can be deformed to be zero. All right? So we can contrast this with sort of the opposite end of the spectrum here. So quantum double models and string net models basically only have sort of a topological contribution to the entanglement spectrum. They do not have a fermionic piece. And this has basically to do with the fact there's no sort of stable edge states in the boundary which are fermionic. And so in this case, the entanglement spectra does contain information about the topological entanglement entropy, but it's pretty much featureless. In fact, if you calculate it for quantum double models, the entanglement spectrum can be specified by a single eigenvalue and is completely flat. Right? So an interesting sort of example which combines both these features is the Kataev-Honeycomb model. So Hong Yao and Xiaoliang Qi calculated the entanglement spectra for this system earlier this year, or maybe last year. And they show that you actually get a fermionic piece and sort of a topological piece, and actually they're completely separable because the model is trivial in this case. And so you can actually break it up into a completely topological piece, which that part of the reduced density matrix completely separates from the fermionic piece, and you see nicely how these two things enter for this specific model. Yeah. Fractional quantum Hall do. That's right. And so in that case, fractional quantum Hall systems are topologically ordered. Integer quantum Hall, which is basically a topological insulator, does not. Okay. So like I said, while the sort of there's no topological entanglement entropy, these systems do have interesting entanglement properties. And the nice thing is, since they're basically free fermion quadratic Hamiltonians, you can solve anything you want. Okay, so these systems will serve as nice examples to sort of illustrate at least what's going on with the fermionic piece, these entanglement spectra, although the topological piece they don't have access to. So the nice thing is, like I said, you can code the stuff in MATLAB, for example, in an hour and calculate anything you want for these systems. So the heuristic picture is basically you have a system, so some topological insulator with a boundary or not, and you break it up into two regions of real space, A and B, and then you cut the systems apart, so you have regions A and B now. And if the system has edge states, basically what you're doing is you're taking A along with its edge states, and you're leaving B with its edge states. And so this is a picture developed, I think, actually by Chet Nayak in a nice paper a few years ago, where you sort of imagine that for topological systems, when you're thinking about tracing out the system, you're sort of left with the state and if it has any remaining edge states, because you're sort of removing the piece that belonged to B, which would cancel the edge states on A. And so what we should expect is that if we take if we trace out the region B, we're going to be left with some sort of what are going to be called cut states. So there are states, low energy modes, which are going to remain on the cut of the system. And so basically tracing out the system kind of acts like you're actually adding an extra artificial boundary to the system. Yes?
Begin with, or do you need some kind of boundary that's...
No, it doesn't matter, actually. So I'm going to say some different points of that. If, for example, this is a topological state like quantum Hall where you have edge states running around the boundary, these states are exponentially localized on the boundary. So if you cut the system, those states are going to be the ones least entangled in the region because they're completely localized. And so you may initially think that all these edge states are going to interfere with what's going on, but it turns out these guys are actually the ones that are going to have no effect as long as the bulk gap is reasonably large. Okay. So the two sort of geometries I'm going to look at are basically if I take a torus and cut it in two pieces, or if I take a cylinder and cut it in two pieces. And so you see the cylinder has an intrinsic physical boundary there, so there actually would be edge states if you have a topological insulator, but like I said, these are not going to contribute to the main entanglement spectrum properties. And it turns out this is the easiest case to look at because this guy actually has two cuts, and so you'll see a combination of two cut state branches, whereas this guy's only have one set of cut state branches. All right, so... I'm first going to talk about what we call the single particle energy spectrum. So I have free fermions, and I can calculate this what's called the single particle entanglement spectrum. And this was actually sort of shown how to do in a really nice but short paper by Peschel. So basically what you're given is you're given some kind of fermionic Hamiltonian on a lattice, for example. And all you have to do is calculate the real space two-particle correlation function. So this can be done for a free fermion Hamiltonian quite simply because you can diagonalize it exactly. And then it turns out that the entanglement Hamiltonian, sort of the piece of the reduced, so if you write a reduced density matrix like in a Boltzmann form, such like exponential of some Hamiltonian, then it turns out this entanglement Hamiltonian is related very simply to this matrix C, where you restrict C to be over the sites in your region you want to trace. Okay, this is a very simple formula. Basically, it means that the eigenvalues of this C operator are one-to-one correspondence with the eigenvalues of the reduced density matrix for free fermion system. Okay, but this is what's called the single particle entanglement spectrum. Right. So let me show you a quick example. This is a system for a trivial insulator. So this case here in the upper left is the physical energy spectrum. You see I've plotted versus K, and I have some energy gap in the system. This is geometry on a torus. This picture is on a torus geometry. So there's actually no physical edge states, even if it was a topological insulator. But this system is in a phase where it's a trivial insulator case. Yes, you're absolutely right. So in this case, numerically solved, I guess, for a cylinder geometry, so it's on a strip. And so you actually can plot it only, it's only translation going into one direction. So what you get is you get basically each one of these, so this thick band here is basically all the states that were in the other momentum direction compressed onto one plane, effectively. Thank you. Okay. So, for example, is what the eigenvalues of C are going to look at. So you see the eigenvalues of C are actually sort of like a probability distribution, they're a cluster between 0 and 1. You see, in this case, most of the eigenvalues are exactly at 0 or exactly at 1. And the entanglement entropy is actually calculated from taking the log of these eigenvalues. And so you see that there's very little entanglement entropy because most of the eigenvalues are clustered around 0 or 1, effectively. So what you see is that these guys contribute very little, and these guys also contribute very little because they give you because the entanglement entropy is related as the log of these eigenvalues plus the log of 1 minus the eigenvalues. These guys both contribute very little to entanglement entropy. And this is because they sort of this is an insulating ground state, and the correlations are exponentially suppressed. Okay, so now if you calculate the sort of single particle entanglement energies, you get this type of diagram. So you see what happens is that if you take this log transform of these eigenvalues, a lot of the information around 0, 1 begins to spread out, and you can actually see some structure here. So again, you see this is what would be called the entanglement energy of the system. And the final picture is basically just the log of the eigenvalues of this. And this transformation is actually more numerically stable. So these are the pictures I'm going to show. So doing this log transform I showed previously is not the most numerically stable thing. And so for most cases, I'm going to show this type of diagram, but you see basically contain the same information. This guy just looks symmetrized around the axis of zero. So most of the diagrams I'll show for the single particle spectrum are diagrams of the log of these eigenvalues. Okay. So now most of you who are working with interacting systems can't do anything with single particle physics, so you have to actually deal with the many-body entanglement spectrum. So typically what you do, you write down the many-body ground state, you split it into, you write down a basis of states which are orthogonal and localized in region A and region B, and then you expand the wave function out in this basis and you get what's called the Schmidt decomposition of these states. Right? So if you write your many-body ground state in this form, these amplitudes, the sort of weight of these different basis states, give you the sort of many-body entanglement energies. Right? So most people who have calculated entanglement spectra are actually getting these guys here coming from the many-body ground state. Right? And for free fermions, the ground state is later determinant. So if you want to calculate the many-body entanglement spectrum of even a free fermion ground state, it's actually still not very efficient because you still have to build up a huge Hilbert space, the RAM, and it's still very slow. But the nice thing is for free fermion systems, there's actually a better way to get the many-body spectrum, and it's very simple. It's the same thing you do to get the many-body spectrum if you have a band structure, a single particle band structure. So what you do is you effectively think about filling these states up to some certain region, and then you can calculate the many-body spectrum just by imagining excitations from a filled entanglement ground state. Okay? Now, the only complication is that what does the Fermi level mean if you're talking about filling up some entanglement spectrum energies? So this subtlety basically has to do with the fact that if you take the reduced density matrix, so if you take a full density matrix expanded for that wave function, the total number of particles is conserved. Okay, so you have some fixed number of particles for your many-body density matrix. If you then trace out a region, the reduced density matrix is going to be a combination of terms with different number of particles in the A region. So for example, some pieces will only have one particle in the A region, some pieces will have half the particles in the A region. And depending on which sector of your many-body density matrix you want to look at is how you fill these states. Yes?
Just from the fermionic covariance matrix, obtain the full spectrum, which would be like polynomial in the size and not exponential.
I see, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so yes. So, yeah, okay.
Right.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, so okay. So there are probably definitely more efficient ways than that to do it than I was trying to do it. So I'd be happy to learn about this from you. The main thing I wanted to understand is
physically, if I have this sort of set of single particle levels, is there a way to fill it like you would fill single particle energy levels to get the many body spectrum? And it turns out there is. And the question is, what does a Fermi level mean? Like, where do you fill it up to? But yeah, okay, so we can talk so I can learn something. Thank you. So this is still the case for the trivial insulator, and you see this is the many body entanglement spectrum at low entanglement energy. And you see here, the ground state here is actually singly degenerate, and there's a closed mode, which has to do with the fact that you can fill some nearby state. And so you see this sort of spectrum has it looks like a very small gap for the ground state energy, but still a gap. And we're going to see a different picture for the Chern insulator. Yes?
In the body spectrum.
Yes, exactly. So that's what the Fermi level means. So it means that if I calculate the reduced density matrix, it's going to be a combination of terms with different number of particles in region A. So what I do is I pick a sector. Okay, the sectors don't mix because particles numbers are a certain case. I pick a sector, and that tells me where I want to fill this single particle spectrum up to. So for example, if I pick this number of sector with half the particles in region A, that's when I half fill this thing and calculate the excitations from that entanglement ground state.
Yeah, but if you compute all the sectors,
yes,
and whether you can consider the full spectrum using that full spectrum to calculate the many body entanglement entropy.
Yeah.
Change than just add
yes.
More spectrum.
Yes, yeah, it's, yeah, it's, yeah, it will work that way. So basically we did the calculation looking at the full many-body ground state and the Schmidt decomposition very inefficiently, and then we did this. Then we figured out how to map it to the filling case. But yeah, so you would take the full every particle sector of the reduced density matrix and then sum up all the eigenvalues to get the entanglement entropy.
Then there is the issue of chemical potential. So where is
the chemical potential is artificial, right? So I have some real chemical potential in my system, which tells me what my ground state is.
Yeah.
This is just saying that if I want to calculate the many-body entanglement spectrum coming from a single sector of my many-body ground state, is there a way to think about as filling it from a single particle entanglement spectrum? So you just sum up for all the states. There's no notion of an entanglement chemical potential. It's sort of an artifice of how to get from the single particle spectrum to the many-body spectrum in an easy way. Okay. So now let's move on to the case of a topological insulator. So I'm solving this system on a cylindrical geometry, and there's open boundary conditions on each edge. If you solve the energy spectrum, you see you get a bulk gap, and you sort of get a single mode on, this is a mode localized on one edge, which is sort of the chiral edge state of this determined insulator system. So in this case, my chemical potential is right at zero, and you see the black dots sort of mean I have a bunch of filled states, and the white dots means everything else is empty above this. Okay, so this is the spectrum for a turn insulator, and I've only shown one of the edge states. The other edge state will actually propagate the other direction. It's an anti-chiral state. All right, so now I'm going to make a cut, as I said before. And since Steve already pointed this out, I'm not going to belabor the point that you could worry if you cut on a cylinder that the physical edge states may interfere with your entanglement spectrum, but since they're completely localized, far away from the cut, they don't affect it. And so you can calculate the sort of single particle entanglement spectrum. So the first picture I'm showing here is the eigenvalues of C for this churn insulator. And this is the cut on a torus. And so you see there's actually two cut states, both going other ways. And you see most of the bulk states are localized around 0 and 1. And you sort of get these states which cross the sort of entanglement gap. All right? So it looks very similar to the edge state spectrum. If you take the log, you see you pull out, if you take the log of this guy, you pull out a lot of the information out of the 0 and 1 bands. And you see these get the sort of states which propagate upward. And I have sort of correlated points A, B, and C with the log transform, as you can see sort of what the point C goes to here. The picture is much simpler if you cut on the cylinder, because then you only get one edge state, and you see this is the sort of picture you get if you take the log. This picture, you see some obvious spectral flows. So what happens is the states here are going from sort of the bottom here, and it's periodic in K, so they keep flowing upward. So you get spectral flow, which just tells you that these states are actually connected with all the bulk states, which has to be, which is sort of the really non-trivial thing about a topological insulator. All right. So that's the single particle spectrum. So what should we expect to see for the many-body entanglement spectrum? So for the many-body case, we should sort of take a hint from what Haldane and Lee said, in that you should get sort of the counting of the edge states. So Haldane and Lee solved the many-body entanglement spectrum for a fractional quantum Hall state. In fact, the nu equals 5 halves more Reed state. And they see that the many-body entanglement spectrum basically gives you the sort of energy spectrum counting of the conformal field theory on the boundary. Okay? So their paper, it's very difficult to understand what's going on the boundary because it's a very complicated conformal field theory. In this case, the conformal field theory is trivial. It's a free fermion, chiral fermion, and we can just simply count what's going to happen. So this is my energy spectrum, and so I'm going to say, so what you're going to see is that if I fill it to some level, I have some filled states and empty states. So the first state you get is the ground state, which means I have some filled state and single degenerate. The next state you can get by hopping electron or raising energy from 0 to 1, and you see there's only one lowest energy excited state. And you can keep on doing this type of thing and keep asking what the set of excited states are, and you get the ground state, and then you can create one particle and then create a particle with angular momentum 2 and so forth. And you see you get this counting structure where these excited states begin to pick up some degeneracy. And so this is sort of the counting. This is sort of tells you what the what the partition function of the conformal field theory is in the boundary. And this is for a trivial chiral fermion case. Okay, so like I said, at each level, if this spectrum is perfectly linear, so you're in the thermodynamic limit, all these guys will be completely degenerate. If you're not in the thermodynamic limit, there will be some band bending, and these states won't be completely degenerate at each level. And we can see this by calculating the many-body spectrum of the Chern insulator, and we see that we get exactly what we expected. So the peck pattern here is 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, and you get 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. You see these guys are not exactly degenerate, but that's just because I'm using a small number of K states and not in the thermodynamic limit. And so you get this 1,1,3,5, and it counts up my small finite size system all the way up to sort of 12 levels. And so you can get this counting so it looks nice, and this is sort of what's expected because you're basically just filling an entanglement spectrum edge state. So it's just sort of a trivial thing where the many-body spectrum counts this conformal field theory on the boundary. So this seems to work also for topological insulators. Okay. So we can also get a picture of what happens in phase transitions in topological insulators by looking at the entanglement spectrum. So like I said, the sort of phase transition happens here when the mass switches sign. It goes between two gap phases. And this is the sort of picture of the energy spectrum at some finite mass. And then we can, hopefully this movie will play, and this is a topological insulator. And then we can see the sort of phase transition happen here as you vary this mass term. Okay, so it goes from a topological insulator with edge states. We saw one state on each edge to the trivial case. So we can sort of look at the eigenvalues of C. So this is a very sparse plot, unfortunately. And so we can sort of see what happens as I plot the eigenvalues of C as you drive the phase transition. You sort of see you get this entanglement edge state, and you're going to see a mode enter in, comes from the bulk, and then it splits these edge states, and they get pushed to the trivial case. So the entanglement spectrum fully shows you the same picture that the energy spectrum shows. So all the information about the phase transition is buried in the entanglement spectrum, which you get only from calculating the ground state. And then we can look at the many-body spectrum. So this is the many-body spectrum for a Chern insulator. We sort of see these characteristic stripes all going in one direction. And then if you calculate
this phase transition process here, you see this sort of a mode entry from the bulk, and it starts to split the ground state, and at the final end, you see a unique ground state plus a huge entanglement gap to the many-body, the rest of the many-body entanglement spectrum. This is plotted for a single fermionic sector of the many-body ground state. Okay, so now let's briefly discuss quantum spin Hall, because there's actually an interesting complication which comes out here. So quantum spin Hall, this is the picture. This is the edge states for a single edge. You see you get a right moving state and a left moving state. And time reversal symmetry is required to protect this degeneracy from opening from simple perturbations. So now if you plot the entanglement spectrum single particle on a cylinder, you see you get both pairs here. And you see this really nice partner switching spectral flow as you go up, in this case, when you take the log. So if any of you guys have seen these papers by Charlie Kane, he has these very nice pictures of spectral flow, which look like this. And this is the same thing you get for the entanglement spectrum. So this partner switching spectral flow, which goes which connects the sort of the bulk things here. And so the many-body entanglement spectrum here looks more symmetric, and you can get this sort of you can get this structure by doing the proper counting of those two energy state branches, but it's a little bit tedious. I'm not going to go through that. In this case, there's a lot more degeneracies which are restricted because of time reversal symmetry. So for example, the ground state here, in this case, is doubly degenerate, which is a consequence of time reversal symmetry. So you get a more symmetric state. So the sort of reason that the churn insulator has sort of a directionality to its many-body spectrum is because it's a chiral state. So now we can ask, there's an extra ingredient here, is what happens if we break time reversal symmetry? So does the entanglement spectrum tell you that the system becomes trivial if you break time reversal symmetry? So if you break time reversal symmetry in the energy spectrum, a gap opens up. So you add some Zeeman term to the boundary, you add some Zeeman term to the bulk, a gap opens up, it's very clear. There's no longer any spectral flow because now the states on this side are not connected to that side. But if you plot the eigenvalues of C, you see you don't get anything, it doesn't look like it changed, okay? So this is a little bit odd, okay? So the point is that if you just look at the states, these edge states, it doesn't tell you the whole story. So the real topological thing about the edge states in topological insulators is the fact they're connected between the valence band and the conduction band, the fact that they're tied. So if you just have some random states in the middle of a gap, you can push them around. But if they're actually tied between the two bulk energy bands, you can deform them however you want, and they still remain in the gap. All right. So the point is we actually need to see what's going on with these bulk states, which are the ones localized around 0 and 1. So in this case, what you see is if you take the log, you see that all of these partner switching spectral flow things are destroyed because even though this single degeneracy remains at k equals 0, all the other degeneracies at pi and 0 are open. Okay. So the point is that what this is telling us is that you really have to pay attention to what's going on with sort of the states that are deep in the bulk when you break time reversal symmetry, because this is where it's sort of killing the topological state. Okay. So it destroys the spectral flow in this case. So now you see that the state down here is no longer connected to the states up here because there's a gap opening up at the pi points. Okay. So it turns out that this degeneracy here is actually exact as long as you have inversion symmetry. So if you break inversion symmetry, you can open every degeneracy. But this guy here is sort of an accidental degeneracy because of an inversion symmetry in the system. Okay, so in the last few minutes of my talk, I'm going to go discuss some sort of new work on entanglement spectra and disordered topological insulators. So every plot I've shown you has been a plot of entanglement spectra plotted versus some momentum. Okay, so I've plotted some dispersion of these states. The question is it useful to think about entanglement spectrum when you have no conserved quantum numbers like momentum? You add disorder, you destroy everything. And so this question is initially clear because even the stuff on fractional quantum Hall states, you see are plotted versus some good quantum number. You really see the structure come out because you can plot it versus that nice quantum number. Okay, so I'm going to discuss an Anderson localization transition in the Chern insulator. Okay, so what does this mean? It means that if you're in two dimensions, even if an electron is not classically pinned down to be at some site, if it can disperse and move around in the system, quantum interference effects in the presence of a disorder can actually localize the electronic state so that a state you initially thought would be a metal is actually now going to be an insulator. Okay, this would be called an Anderson insulator in two dimensions. And so while classically you might expect the system to be a metal, quantum mechanically it's going to be an insulating phase. So what you can say is that given a fixed disorder strength and a particular energy, is the state there at that energy localized or delocalized? Okay. So how do you characterize this sort of phase transition? So how do you know when your system goes from being a metal to an insulator by adding disorder? Okay. So what you can do for free fermions is you can actually exactly diagonalize the system at a random potential. So what you do is you solve the energy spectrum for many, many disorder configurations. So each sort of vertical line here is a single energy spectrum, and you do this for many, many disorder configurations, and you construct statistics over these many disorder configurations. This is called a disorder quenching process. You're averaging over many configurations. Okay. So we see this system at zero disorder was kind of an insulator, but now as you add disorder, you see you're kind of closing the bulk gap. So it's not clear what's going on here. So if you want to characterize a transition, what you do is you sort of pick an energy window and take statistics on the average any of the energy level spacings in that window. So you sort of look at the differences in energy level spacings in this window, and you average them over some huge number of disorder configurations. This is going to tell you something about what's going on in the system. Yes?
I'm using results, non-results on exponential decay of eigenfunctions.
So I'm doing this numerically. Yes, that's right. So then what you do is you can repeat this process for many different energies, and what that tells you is that at that energy, and for this disorder strength, are the states of that energy localized or not? Okay, and so how do you know that? Well, the statistics of these energy spacings can follow roughly two distributions for this universality class. So if they're localized, this distribution looks exponential like this, like Poisson like, and the variance of this distribution in this case is roughly it's going to be 1. Okay? So if your statistics of that energy looks like exponential decay, then the states of that energy are localized.
The counterexample is if you get the sort of Wigner surmise distribution for the unitary class, which is what I'm looking at since I'm looking at a quantum Hall state. In this case, you see that the distribution of energy differences looks very different. It has this sort of distorted bell-shaped curve, and this guy has a variance of 0.178, which is much lower. Okay, so if you look at the two distributions, you see you can clearly tell that they're different, and if you plot the distributions for different energies, you can tell whether the states there are roughly localized or not if you have good enough statistics. Okay, so what I'm using here is I'm using my Chern insulator model, H0, the Haldane model, and I'm adding a random disorder potential, and I'm using white noise disorder, which means I'm sort of taking random variables and from a uniform distribution, and I'm putting random energies on each site, okay, which is going to disorder the system. Okay, so this is the sort of picture you get for a disordered Chern insulator. So what I'm plotting here is this black mess here is a sort of fully closed band structure, okay, so this is many, many disorder configurations, 1,000, for example, in this case, and the black dots, each vertical set of black dots is an energy spectrum. So you can't even see the bulk gap any longer. It's completely closed. So this is a Chern insulator with a huge, well, not huge, but a reasonably big disorder strength. And overlaying this graph, I'm plotting the variance at each energy, okay? So you see the variance here, and the variance is plotted between 0 and 1, and this dotted blue line here is the variance of the delocalized Wigner-Surmise distribution, okay? So states here which have variance close to 1 or large are basically roughly exponentially, have an exponential distribution like Poisson, and are localized, okay? So you see here there's two regions where the variance gets very close to 0.178, and these are actually regions of delocalized states in this case, okay? So what I'm plotting here is this variance, and you see there's still, even though I have a huge disorder, I can't even see the bulk gap any longer, there's still some sort of delocalized state in the system, okay? So now we can crank up the disorder, and you see what happens is these two lobes merge near zero energy and then lift away from zero. Okay, so as I'm adding disorder strength, I'm sort of killing these localized states, the delocalized states. And eventually, for really strong disorder, you're going to get to where the variance is roughly 1 and everything is localized. Right? So this, you see this spread here has a huge disorder, and everything's just the energy spectrum is completely spread out. Right? So this tells you that there's a phase transition with disorder between a system here with delocalized states and a system here with completely localized states. Yes?
Those are delocalized regions in the spectrum, right? Or are there specific single states that are delocalized?
That's a good question. So our statistics aren't good enough to tell you that. So what's saying is that there's some region here where the spectrum gets very close. In the thermodynamic limit, I don't know if it's going to be one state or some small region of states. I would imagine thermodynamic limit has to go to one state.
Do you have an edge in your sample?
No, this case is for a torus sample. It's the energy spectrum on a torus. Okay, so the point is that this delocalized state is basically the state that becomes the edge state when you cut. When you make a cut in the system, this delocalized state is sort of what gives you the edge state. So as soon as the delocalized state disappears, there's no reason you're going to have an edge state if you do make a cut in the system. Okay, so we can look at this lower disorder. You actually can still see the bulk gap, and although it's a little bit hard to see, you see if the energy is way up here where it's completely localized, you see the distribution of the energy level states roughly follows the Poisson distribution. And as you come here to this region where it's more delocalized, you see the sort of distribution of energy spacings looks more like this Wigner-Surmise bell-shaped curve here. Okay, and so here you see this is for increasing disorder strength, and you see here the bulk gap is completely killed, but we still have the structure where we have these localized regions of states like you have here. Okay, so this is for the energy spectrum. Okay, I haven't said anything about entanglement yet. Okay. So for a disordered trivial insulator, you see something completely different. Okay, so in this case, even for weak disorder, you see there's no
states where the variance touches 1.78, and you see this keeps getting more and more localized here. So this is the contrasting picture where there's no regions of the localized state in the spectrum. This is for a trivial insulator. Yes, I'm about to tell you. Yeah. Okay, so this is the picture again of the energy spectrum for the for a low disorder case for the topological turn insulator. You can see these variances here get very close to this bound of 1.78 in these two regions. And what you can do, just like Eduardo just asked, is you can calculate the turn number at each of these energies. Okay, so actually we sort of came up with a very efficient way for a real space definition of the turn number, which does not require you to twist boundary conditions. So in fact, it's very simple to calculate for a single disorder configuration ground state. We have a real space formula which allows you to discretely calculate the turn number, and it's sort of exponentially asymptoting to the actual value of the turn number in the thermodynamic limit. So you see, let's look at the case here. Well, my Fermi level lies in a bulk gap. We go down to this plot here, the turn number is 1, okay, fixed V1, all right? So now let's start increasing the Fermi level, okay? So we go up here to this green region where it still looks like a branch of localized states, okay? So here we go to this picture, fixed to V1. So now I have low energy modes. I'm no longer in a complete bulk gap. There's disordered states there, but the points are completely localized, and so my turn number is not changing. Okay. Now, as you pass through this region of delocalized states, you see the turn number rapidly drops from 1 until you get above this region to exactly 0. Okay. So what that means is the system is still a turn insulator until your Fermi level passes through this region of delocalized states. So even though there's no bulk gap, there's energy levels around where your Fermi level is, it completely switches. Okay, so it goes from being turn insulator to up here as a trivial insulator. So as a function of Fermi level, the system goes through a phase transition between a turn insulator and a trivial insulator, in this case, as it passes through the delocalized state. Right? So now I'm going to talk about entanglement. So the plots on the left are actually plots of the single particle entanglement spectrum for many, many disorder configurations at each energy. Okay. And the same line I'm plotting here, overlaying, is actually the variance 0.178. So we now see, let's go to this case here, where I'm in this energy here, this plot, where I actually have turn number 1. So in this case, you see the sort of variance of the entire entanglement spectrum flattens out to 0.178. Okay, so that means the entanglement spectrum is actually telling you that this is sort of a region where you have some sort of topological structure still there, right? And so this sort of area around zero energy is problematic. You see in every figure it's away from this variance. And that's because around zero energy in this case, you effectively have very, very few states, so statistics are not very good. But if you go to the thermodynamic limit where you have many, many states still, in principle, this thing should flatten out to exactly 0.178. So that means in this case where you're at this region of turn insulator here, the sort of variance of these states of the entire entanglement spectrum, single particle entanglement spectrum averaged, flattens out to 0.178. And so you can see that even the sort of statistics of the entanglement spectrum give you the same thing that the energy spectrum gives you. And you see that as soon as you go to the case where everything's localized here, the entanglement spectrum gives you a variance which is very far away from 0.178. So you can see the phase transition in this case purely from the entanglement spectrum eigenvalues.
Exactly. So yes. The problem here is that we don't have enough states. So if you cut the system,
if you trace out a system, it's going to give you entanglement states in the bulk gap effectively. But if the size of your cut is not big enough, you get terrible statistics. And so exactly. So this figure here is for the Fermi level right at zero, but it's problematic because in that case, you don't get enough states which lie on the cut. And the thermodynamic limit, we would hope that it should give you the same type of picture where it should be completely, show you the delocalized effect there. Okay. So the trivial insulator, again, you see something completely contrasting, and you see here there's no energy at which the variance in the entanglement spectrum hits 0.178. And so this clearly shows that the entanglement spectrum is telling you about this stuff, and so this, you can do the same statistics on the entanglement spectrum you would on the energy spectrum. Okay. So why is that advantageous? Well, hopefully the nice thing would be is if you could extend this to a many-body case, right? So you take a many-body system, and instead of having to calculate with this order, instead of having to calculate the entire excited energy spectrum to see what's localized or not, you calculate the ground state. Okay? The ground state gives you some huge number of eigenvalues because you can calculate the reduced density matrix from this thing. And now you only have to calculate numerically the ground state for many, many disorder configurations, which you can do doing Lanchos or something like this, and don't have to worry about calculating the entire excited energy spectrum of your many-body system. So hopefully numerically this will lead to some new tools to study the many-body localization problem, because now you only need the ground state and to do some manipulations with that. You don't have to worry about calculating the entire energy spectrum. So that's what I wanted to wrap up with. So thank you.
it's stated more question.
Is there any, well, qualitative or quantitative way of thinking about these computations directly in a one plus one dimensional manner, since the results you get are ultimately some 1D thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Effectively, the single particle entanglement spectrum is analogous to taking your full Hamiltonian, infinite Hamiltonian, deforming it continuously to a limit where all the bands are flat, and then solving that Hamiltonian with open boundaries. Okay, so then you could get something about physical edge states. But yeah, I haven't thought clearly about understanding everything in terms of these cut states. Okay. Okay, the problem is that a lot of the information stored in distributed states matrix has to do with states which are very deep buried in the bulk, and not the ones just on the cut. So you can see that from the case when you break time with symmetry in quantum spin-Hall, the sort of cut state doesn't get a gap, but all the bulk states are, you know, get split some way. So I don't know. I don't know an obvious one that comes to mind about how to interpret.
Because you can do this for the Hall states, at least.
Yeah, so what it's telling you is that this the fermionic piece that sits in the gap tells you about what's going on the boundary. Okay, if you cut a physical boundary, it tells you that there's some entanglement there, some fermionic entanglement coming from the fact that if you can really cut it physically, you get some conformal field theory on the boundary, and you can understand everything from that. So this work has been done by whatever, Haldane, Bernardig, all these guys at Princeton, who have sort of completely killed this problem. Like, they just take every fraction from Hall state and look at the thing, and they match the conformal field theory, and everything seems to match. So all this stuff is still sort of, I would say, in an empirical state. There's not a whole lot of analytic results for fermionic systems like this, even though the ground states are very simple. It's still an empirical state, so this is sort of observational because I didn't show you any analytic formulas or anything like that. And hopefully it will lead to some new tools, but it's still not clear yet how to understand actually everything exactly physically what's going on. So.
Could you make a comment? You made a mysterious comment saying that you can calculate the Chern number locally.
Yes.
Can
right.
you say sensitive?
Right, yeah. So basically what you can do is you can take the projection operator form of the Chern number in momentum space. Okay, so it's P of K, DP, DP type of formulation, gauge invariant, and you Fourier transform that. Okay. So you Fourier transform that and you get some real space quantity. Okay, but it still requires you to be in some continued limits. Okay, but it turns out you can discretize this formula very nicely, and basically it amounts just to completely calculating the Fourier transform of the momentum space Chern number for a clean system. So for a clean system, you can integrate the Chern number density over momentum space, you get a quantized number. If you Fourier transform this quantity and find the right way to discretize it, you can calculate the Chern number in real space, and you do not need to twist boundary conditions. So for example, you only need to solve your Hamiltonian one time for each disordered configuration, as opposed to, let's say, 1,000 times for each twisted boundary condition to average over. So if you want to talk about this more, we can. The details are a little bit complicated, but it just basically amounts to Fourier transforming the...
Is this related to the way that Joel Moore, Matt Hastings, calculate feature numbers?
Joel Moore and Matt Hastings?
They have a system that sounds kind of like that thing. They take the overlap of the wave function, I think, with an e to the ik...
X. It may be related, yeah, it may be related. So okay. I'd like to see the reference. Yes.
You get similar kind of results for the disorder quantum spin-Hall case?
Yeah, we do actually. So the quantum spin-Hall is a very weird thing. So what happens there, and I just didn't show the results, but we have some nice results for that. If you take quantum spin-Hall and you don't add any coupling between the spin-up and spin-down blocks, it turns out you get exactly the same picture as the Chern insulator. Okay? It also has to do with the fact that your energy level spacing is these double degenerate. The energy level spacings are exactly the same as two copies of Chern insulators, so you get the same variance, okay? So in order to see the variance of the symplectic class, which is like 0.1, you actually have to add inversion breaking terms which split the spin bands. In that case, you see exactly goes to the same thing. So the quantum spin Hall, if you add inversion breaking terms, it goes exactly to the symplectic class variance, just like it's exactly the same as you see here.
Is that related to the fact that if you break inversion, your entanglement spectrum becomes fully gap?
It's not really that. It's more like a consequence that you get a lot of sort of accidental degeneracies if you pick the sort of simple model I showed, which is 2 decoupled copies. And then everything reduces pathologically to the Chern insulator case. But if you take a generic quantum spin-Hall and a symplectic class, which is actually in the symplectic class, you'll get the real symplectic variance in that case.
Good. So if there is no other questions, then let's take the speaker.